You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Tomorrow on the program, we will welcome Ellie Bordeaux, who puts together our newsletter. You can get it every weekday morning at upnorthnewswi.com, and I'll tell you all about what's in today's issue of the newsletter in just a couple of moments here. But first, I wanted to go over one of the headlines from yesterday, where State Attorney General Josh Call filed an appeal in a court case where a Waukesha County judge has tried to throw a big old wrench into next year's elections. I mean, perhaps plunging next spring's elections into chaos over something not necessary. Unless you're a conservative who believes that scare tactics are the only way that you can win an election. That seems to be the only justification for this. If you want to learn more, Molly Beck from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has a great story about it that she's put up. And it's all about appealing the order by Waukesha County Circuit Judge Michael Maxwell from earlier this month that says the Wisconsin Elections Commission must review the state's voter rolls to determine whether anyone who is not a U.S. citizen is registered to vote. Call is saying that is not needed. There's been no evidence presented of irreparable harm or failing to notify even one non-citizen who had voted or registered to vote in a Wisconsin election. And yet, Maxwell initially ordered election officials to verify the citizenship of any new registrants as well, but agreed to hold off on that portion of the decision, but is still making the state, if this order were to hold, go back into the voter rolls and check on 3.6 million people in the voter rolls and somehow check their citizenship status. Now, he doesn't exactly say how. The judge says, well, the DOT has records. Well, yeah, but not every undocumented immigrant has a driver's license. So there's really no mechanism to do this. And the Wisconsin Elections Commission has said, we do not have the resources to check the citizenship status of 3.6 million people before the next election, which is the spring primary election next February 18th. The judge, Maxwell, said in his ruling that the Elections Commission is, quote, violating state and federal statutes by maintaining an election system that potentially allows individuals onto the voter rolls who may not be lawfully entitled to cast a vote in Wisconsin. Wow, the word potentially is doing a lot of heavy lifting in there. There is no evidence at all that non-citizens are voting, and certainly not in bigger numbers big enough to swing elections. As we seem to have to note over and over and over again for folks in the back row and the far right of the auditorium, why would someone undocumented try to vote and risk being caught and deported? In what fantasy of yours is that an actual thing? As noted in Molly Beck's story, state law currently requires voters to attest that they are U.S. citizens. It does not require elections officials to obtain proof, and yet that's what the judge is doing, which, like I said, is a big project to take on to retroactively check the citizenship status of 3.6 million voters. Maxwell said this in his decision, quote, if one non-citizen is present on the voter rolls and thus can cast even one unlawful vote, there can be no doubt as to the injury to every other lawful voter in Wisconsin whose lawfully cast vote could be canceled. Were this to happen to a Wisconsin citizen, the damage to the right to cast a lawful ballot would be irreparable, and there is no other remedy available at law to cure it. Drama much? Can we please bring this back to reality? Let's, shall we? In this case, in the example I'm about to give you, the State Elections Commission is the U.S. Post Office, okay? It delivers all the mail that comes in and appears to be properly addressed. Even the mail that it turns out falls under the category of mail fraud. Think of scams against the elderly, the infamous Nigerian prince inheritance, telling veterans about non-existent benefits, pyramid schemes, sham vacation rental offers, and so on. They all get delivered because the post office delivers the mail. If someone is caught doing something illicit through the mail, that's mail fraud. They get charged and punished. Everyone else gets no disruption in their mail delivery. So now imagine if Judge Maxwell were Postmaster General and he were to say this: you know, if one piece of mail defrauds an American, there can be no doubt as to the injury to every other American whose mail might also be fraudulent. Were this to happen, the damage would be irreparable and there is no other remedy to cure it. And so the post office would have to somehow put the brakes on delivering the mail until they can somehow create a process that ensures that nothing that constitutes mail fraud goes out. Or hear me out here, you go after the mail fraud and the voter fraud when there is evidence of a potential crime. Look, I don't know that everyone would agree on whether any particular judge qualifies as a so-called activist judge. But I think if you're answering the question in the blind, most folks would say that creating a solution in search of a problem probably checks that box. And that's what we have in this order by the Waukesha County judge. And it is why Attorney General Josh Call is making that appeal. And tangentially to this conversation, what we said last week, as first mentioned by Dan Schaefer during his visit last Tuesday, Josh Call decided not to run for governor and decided instead to run for a third term as Wisconsin Attorney General. And that can turn out to be a very good thing for the state, because without a strong Attorney General who's focused on the law as it relates to the real lives of Wisconsin residents, you risk having an Attorney General, as well as a governor, legislators, and everybody else, who insist on trying to bring politics into every aspect of our lives, no matter how much it may inconvenience all the rest of us, so that they can push through or ram through a partisan political agenda. Today's history lesson is on the way with the aforementioned Kim Kardashian meatloaf and illness and more.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
This next topic is a little more on the mature side when it comes to politics, policy, and the real world impact on people, and includes discussions about sexual assault, but also about the medical decisions that have to be made by families. It gets beyond the what I would say is just outright game playing that's happening in places like the nation's capital right now, where healthcare to some people just seems to be a case of numbers on a spreadsheet, and that these are very generic concerns. But when it comes to people, families with people who have developmental and other disabilities, this is no game. And we're not just talking about the medications that people need on a daily basis. There is, for an example, a statistic that says somewhere around 80% of women who have developmental disabilities or intellectual disabilities, around 80% have been sexually assaulted at some point in life. And so access to things like contraception and the full range of reproductive health care services is vitally important, and yet is under threat in so many ways through Medicaid cuts, through cuts to premium tax credits that make health insurance affordable through the Affordable Care Act, and much more. It's these kinds of real issues that Megan Lowe has to deal with her daughter, Nora. And she joins us now to talk to us about that from the Merrimack area. Megan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. We're doing great here.
Good. And you have Nora there with you as well. Can you tell us just a little bit about Nora's story.
Sure. Nora is 17 years old. She has what is called Rett syndrome, R-E-T-T. It's a neurological disorder. It affects everything she does, but she is a 17-year-old inside. So she understands us. It's just her expressive language and her body control that really hinder her daily life.
Yeah, it's a case of, like you said, muscle control, speaking, walking, seizures are a feature as well.
Yes.
And this is something that does not currently have a cure, as I understand.
Correct. No, okay. There are just ways to mitigate symptoms.
Mm-hmm. So that takes us to the need for all sorts of affordable health insurance resources. And mm-hmm. I am going to assume that you are not independently wealthy and mm-hmm. that health insurance and medications and things for Nora are probably a constant struggle.
Mm-hmm. We do have private insurance, but a lot of our private insurance they don't cover a lot of her daily needs. Those are picked up by Medicaid. Formulas. She eats through a G-tube. All of her syringes, diapers, wipes are even some of the durable medical equipment our private insurance does not cover. So I'm really worried to think of families that do rely on ACA. How are they going to get these items that they need for their child to survive on a daily basis?
Yeah, because again, so part of it is through Medicaid, and part of it as well would be through these enhanced premium tax credits. These are things that were added through the Biden administration and Congress 4 years back mm-hmm. to help make these plans under the Affordable Care Act more affordable. So between the expiration of these enhanced premium tax credits for the Affordable Care Act and the approximately $1 trillion in cuts coming to Medicaid, I can only ask you to speak for yourself, but how concerned are you when you hear about healthcare cuts in these two different areas?
I'm incredibly concerned because how are we supposed to prop up and support our state's most vulnerable people, especially when they are at risk of such egregious actions just by having a disability and being a woman? The fact that under the Affordable Care Act, birth control is free with insurance. There's no copay. If they let these premium tax credits expire, women will lose coverage. They're going to lose protection. I don't understand why they're trying to get rid of tools in our toolbox. As caregivers, these are off-ramps that we need to have access to, and they're taking them away.
And doing so, again, to a population that was vulnerable to begin with, but as I noted at the top of the segment here, there is a depressingly large number of, sexual assaults of one type or another that take place for women with developmental and intellectual disabilities. And so you had to have this very real conversation about mm-hmm. Making sure that Nora had contraception.
Yep. We spoke with her medical team, and they approached it as I was doing it as a caregiver to limit the number of periods or, to make her care easier. And I said, no, the actual reason is because she has an over 80% chance of being sexually assaulted in her lifetime. It's 50% of having it happen more than once. That is the reason why we're putting her on contraception. And then of course, sure, there's a lot of women go on contraception for other reasons. And those are just some benefits that we will see when she's on it. So we cannot lose this for this vulnerable population. This is just so important that we cannot lose this. We cannot lose the tax credits.
No. And for folks who might be saying, well, I mean, if she needs virtually 24-hour care, how is it that she's unsupervised? I can tell you, not just as a, from a family standpoint, I can tell you from a journalist standpoint, again, a depressing number of news stories that have been done over the years of people who were, you know, violated by mm-hmm. people who were in their care for a short time or, mm-hmm. you know, an acquaintance or anything like that. So this need for contraceptive services is extremely real, along mm-hmm. with all of the other, you know, medications. And then you've got the nature of Medicaid itself, which in Wisconsin covers around 1 out of 3 births mm-hmm. to begin with. So Medicaid truly is a lifeline to all sorts of families around Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Without affordable coverage, women are going to lose their right to no-cost contraception. Premiums are going to rise. Women are going to pay the price. Women with disability. I mean, what are we going to do? We can't at the federal level, as far as the special education, I just feel like this vulnerable group of people, they are just being forgotten about.
And I have to say one, again, startling statistic that I was aware of being married to an OBGYN and, of course, knowing several of them as well, is that there are at times 1 in 5 uninsured women who say they've had to stop using a birth control method because they couldn't afford it. Mm-hmm. And again, that shouldn't be a thing, Megan.
No, it shouldn't be a thing. That is reproductive health care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Megan Lowe is our guest. She's a mom and caregiver to Nora. We're talking about how cuts to health care, whether it's Affordable Care Act insurance premiums or Medicaid cuts, are having a real impact on families and a real concern for families that maybe haven't felt the impact yet, but it sure seems like they're going to if this government shutdown continues on. Have you done outreach to any elected officials about this? Clearly, it's good that you're speaking out about this, but I wonder if you've had interaction with elected officials in the past and whether they share your level of concern.
Oh, definitely. Diane Hasselbein and Lisa Subek, we have been working with them for the Access to Contraception Act. The Republicans... they're not interested. This act would ensure that people have access to contraception and the reproductive care that they need. But it's not going anywhere because we know the political environment in the Capitol. So, I mean, people are talking about it. There is legislation. It's just hard to get things going down at the Capitol.
It really is. And we're talking about the state capitol here. You've had discussions, mm-hmm. I know, with Republican lawmakers. And I mean, do you feel like you've come away that they either don't empathize or maybe don't even believe you when you talk about your concerns?
I feel like when it's a face-to-face conversation, they definitely empathize with us and they seem to support us. That's why I don't understand the disconnect between the actual voting for legislation versus just the lip service.
Well, there's another topic that we hear about with that, and that deals with, cannabis and, legalization of, mm-hmm. THC and things like that. That's something that you're concerned about as well from the standpoint of, pain management and things like that.
Definitely. Nora and I are part of the Wisconsin Wellness Coalition. We're working with, we actually just worked with Senator Testin and Senator Filskowski. Their medical bill that they are introducing is really great. And I really hope that it gets traction because that also really helps women with disabilities, women and men with disabilities throughout the state. Again, it's our most vulnerable people in the state that seem to be overlooked. This is a safety issue. These people exist. They are loved. They are in our families. They deserve a place at the table.
And it's also, frankly, a convenience issue. Wisconsin is quickly becoming an island surrounded by states that have provided mm-hmm. some form of legalization, at least for, medical use of cannabis products. And mm-hmm. so there's a whole lot of Wisconsinites that face a very long drive for an assortment mm-hmm. of services and products right now.
Well, I'm a breast cancer survivor. I was diagnosed in 2023, and I have utilized our neighboring cannabis for my treatment and to get better. And it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I testified to that. I feel like there are a lot of issues in the state capitol that are, they have the support, the Contraception Access Act, cannabis. The legislator, the Republican legislator, is just not letting those bills come forward. And there is support, and it's very sad to see.
It is, because again, at both levels, at the state legislative level and at the federal congressional level, there are things that can be done. At the federal level, maybe not slash, you know, $1 trillion from Medicaid. And at the state mm-hmm. level, maybe accept the Medicaid expansion and cover more people so that they, you know, that they have affordable care. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, Megan, then as people hear about this shutdown and they hear that it deals with healthcare issues like the enhanced premium credits for the Affordable Care Act, what is the ultimate takeaway? What is it that you hope people think about moving forward whenever they start hearing the news reports about the shutdown dragging on?
Well, when premiums rise, women are going to pay the price. Congress needs to keep the premium tax credits in place to protect contraception and reproductive care. There is no way around it. I'm not sure what we're going to do for these people if they don't.
Megan Lowe joins us from the Merrimack area with her daughter, Nora, to talk to us more about how this is all real. This isn't just some game that they play in Washington. It's mm-hmm. not just some, you know, stalling that they do in Madison. There are real people and lives affected by this. And Megan, I appreciate so much that you were able to take time with us today and help share Nora's story and your story with us all. Thank you again. I hope you have a good day.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Megan, very much. Still ahead, coming up in the next hour, we will be talking to Sean O'Malley about your money and the markets. We'll be talking to Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCO in Wausau. And, of course, catching up on the week's political news with Joe Zepecki. I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Nice to have you back at 7:35 on this Wednesday morning. Now, there are local news updates throughout the course of our show here, 6 to 9 weekdays on the Civic Media Radio Network. But even as those local updates are happening on most stations, we continue yammering over here from Chippewa Falls and Madison. And if you'd ever like to listen into the show that way or watch what we're doing, there's always the Civic Media app where you can tune into one of the other stations that continues to play the network feed. You can certainly watch what we do on YouTube or Facebook. That would be the Up North News Facebook or YouTube pages, or the Civic Media YouTube and Facebook pages. Or you can sign up for us as a podcast. Head over to Spotify or Apple and follow the program that way. And you'll never miss a minute of what it is that we are talking about over here on weekday mornings. Like at 7:35, 7:36 now, on Wednesday morning for our homeroom segment, when we talk about public education in Wisconsin and, you know, its many positive qualities and the many threats that are out there from privatization, from people playing politics with our schools, people playing politics with school funding in our state. We have a state funding system that is much more convoluted than it needs to be. And each session of the legislature, every 2 years when they write a new state budget, they try to work around the system as best they can. And in this last state budget, legislative Republicans and Democratic Governor Tony Evers finally reached a deal, but it is a deal that is not exactly sitting well with a large number of school districts that are not seeing much of an increase in general state aids. They're seeing some increased dollars in other parts of the budget, like special education. But on the whole, they're still having a tough time keeping up with inflation, conceivably leading to another record round of school referendums across the state. So joining us to talk more about it is the president of the school board in Viroqua, Angie Lawrence, who was also part of a news conference last week with some state lawmakers to describe the problems in the system and how school districts have to live with the reality of them in the here and now. And Angie Lawrence joins us now from Viroqua. Angie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. I'm great. How are you?
It's nice to have you. Very well. Thank you very much. So we saw you in this news conference last week talking about the system here, which, again, if you take the party labels out of it and you just look at the system itself, this is not something that you or probably any other school board president would draw up on a napkin someplace and put into effect. And yet you have to learn it and deal with, you know, the realities of the here and now. So let folks know what you were saying last week about general state aid in this new state budget and what it means for school districts like yours.
So number one, we don't even get the budget until October. So that's one of the problems. I mean, school starts, our annual budget starts in July. So I don't know how many businesses run their business by not having a budget until, you know, 5-6 months after their annual year begins. So that's one issue. So when this came out, this recent budget came out and their decisions, it affected a lot of school districts, millions and millions of dollars that they thought that they were going to receive and then they didn't receive. That wasn't the case in our district. We received a little over $8,000 less than what we had anticipated, but it didn't affect us as it did many other schools. What has affected us is the voucher program. So the voucher program, and I can give you an example, the Academy of Excellence in Milwaukee, for example, they are going to receive over $50 million this year from our local taxpayers. Their last year, only 18% of their students only met expectations, 18%. Zero exceeded expectations in language arts. And then in math, only 13% of their students met expectations with 0% exceeding expectations. I don't know about anybody out there, but if your school district had that type of success or failure, I think that you would be trying to contact the DPI. You would try to get the DPI in there. You would be trying to perhaps close the school because they were incapable of meeting the expectations for children and their educational outcomes. So that's one of the issues. Our school district spent almost $1.2 million from our local taxpayers for the voucher program this last year. So we're supposed to provide a high quality of education for every student, and it's just not happening with this voucher program. They have no accountability. They say on the website that they hope that you'll take the test, but if you don't want to, that's all you have to do is send them an email. So they're not even advocating for students and families to take the test to see how accountable their educational system is in Milwaukee. They also have only 800 of their students actually attend in brick and mortar buildings in Milwaukee. So that means that there's, because they have about 3,700 students in their program, they did last year. And so that means that there's, you know, 2,900 students that are homeschooled, which that was not the intent of the voucher program. And they're not perhaps testing. They don't know if the students are doing the work or if the parents are doing the work. They don't know if the students are taking the test or the parents are taking the test. And there's no accountability for these dollars. So I don't believe that that's our legislators' intent, but that's what's happening. It would be like the Viroqua Area School District saying, we're going to create a voucher school because we have brick and mortar. And we're going to include all of the Amish population, and we're not going to have licensed teachers. We're just going to let them teach, and we're going to let them follow their curriculum, whatever that might be. And then we're going to receive funding for it. And once again, I do not think that's the intent of our legislators, but that is something that could happen that would bring dollars to our school district without us really having to do anything at all. I mean, that's ludicrous. We are not going to do that. But those are the types of things that can happen because of how the voucher program is running. And then you spoke about referendums. So we have passed two referenda in the last 4 or 5 years. One was brick and mortar. We added a very large technical education component to our school and updated the equipment, which was very much necessary, and then made some repairs that were needed. And that was a $20 million referendum. And we were very, very fortunate to have support of our community. But we did have a failed referendum, and that was operational. And then we had to go back to the community and ask for the dollars again. And that this time when we did pass, it was only for 2 years. So now we're going to have to go to a referendum again in another year to ask our community to assist in funding our school. This costs a lot of money. It's a huge amount of time and effort to explain why we need it. You know, our community, like I said, is very philanthropic. They support schools. But why are we going every 2 or 3 years to referendum? And a big part of it is the state budget. The state budget, you know, only lasts for 2 years. So we never know what's going to happen in the next 2 years. They're going to take money away from us, if they're going to add a small amount, if it's going to meet inflation. So this has become a huge problem for trying to operate our school districts and prepare for the future. And there's also a bunch of inequity. I mean, I could go on and on forever with this, but it's creating more inequity for students because your poor communities are failing at a very large rate their referendum that they're trying to pass. And your wealthy school districts are passing their referendum. And so that's creating, like I said, a huge separation between the haves and the have-nots. And I believe in every child receiving a very high level of education, and I'm sure all your listeners do as well. But why is our state and all our tax dollars not going to the state, and then all of those dollars are being dispersed equally with every student versus having to go to a referendum and trying to pass something and spending, like I said, a very large amount of money, a very large amount of time and energy, and you don't know if it's going to pass or not?
No.
How do you keep your teachers? How do you keep your programs? It doesn't make any sense.
No, there's such uncertainty as a result of the system. Angie Lawrence is the president of the school board in Viroqua, and we're talking about the many flaws in the system that were frankly only exacerbated by this new state budget. And for all the wisecracks about people talking about, you know, government schools and resources, well, imagine, you know, how much fewer the challenges would be if you weren't skimming nearly $1 billion a year off the top and taking that away and giving it to these schools that are not accountable, that are not nearly as transparent, that are doing things, like you said, where their students are opting out of standardized tests at an alarming rate and leading, therefore, to more referendums. The system, as much as we say there are problems with it, the fact of the matter is that the basics are pretty easy to understand. Yes. We have a Wisconsin Constitution that says that, you know, education should be supported in as uniform a way as practicable. These are things that we can get back to those standards. There was a Blue Ribbon Commission, yes, dedicated to fixing this system with Republicans and Democrats on it, and yet nothing has come of it since. So, Angie, this is just all to say, we can identify the flaws in the system. We can also fix the flaws in the system if we could get lawmakers that wanted to take your concerns seriously.
Well, it's not rocket science. Right. I mean, you're talking about deferring tax dollars, property tax dollars from different communities, having to raise those tax dollars versus the state saying, you know what, we're going to raise taxes and it's all going to go to schools. Not all of the dollars, obviously, but it's going to go to schools so that every child in the state of Wisconsin receives a high quality education. And taxpayers should be able to understand that because they're already paying more in property taxation by passing a referendum. I mean, and schools are fiscally responsible. It's not like we're spending needless dollars to educate our kids. And the budget is not meeting inflation. Our state is becoming funded at a lower rate than all of the others, not all the other states, but it's, I think we're 24th right now. Don't quote me on that, as far as state funding. So we can do way better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was once upon a time when Wisconsin was in or near a top 10 for support of our public schools. Some politicians said that was too much. Well, now, as we're dropping to the middle of the pack and below, you wonder at what point they're going to say, okay, that's enough. We don't want to fall to the very bottom. Well, unfortunately, it seems like some politicians want exactly that as part of the ongoing push to privatization. And it's what we follow in this segment with good people like Angie Lawrence, who serves as president of the Viroqua School Board. Angie, I really appreciate your expertise and your service. Thank you so much for joining us today to share more of the background about it.
There's one more thing. You know, they say that they're funding students that have some type of a disability, but actually, if you look at how their formula works out, we're not receiving hardly any dollars for students with disabilities.
Exactly. More things to examine there. Thank Angie, thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Coming up in the next hour, we'll be talking to Earl Ingram of the What's Going On with Earl Ingram podcast. That and more still ahead. Dr. Kristen Lyerly joining us at 8:35. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Just about 6:23 right now, and I have the unhappy duty to tell you it's still dark out there. Oh, well, seasons change. Winter's still approaching. Why? We're talking about Christmas shopping. Of course we are. Coming up later today across the Civic Media Radio Network, Matt Nair on Air follows this fine program at 9 o'clock. Deborah Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters will join Jane Matinair and Greg Bach. Again, that's about 9:35 that you can catch Deborah Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters. Todd Alba, who had a birthday yesterday, is... but not old enough to retire, contrary to public opinion. He'll have his show today from 2 to 4. I will be joining him along with Trigvi Olson from the Lincoln Project right off the top, just after the news at 2 o'clock. And the Maggie Dawn Show this afternoon from 4 to 6. Coming up at 5 o'clock, she will have officials from the group Kids Forward on how the government shutdown has led to the real possibility that SNAP nutritional benefits may start to run out because of the shutdown. So again, you've got Donald Trump, Derek Van Orden, and friends who would rather see families lose out on their food assistance and see health insurance costs rise to pay for tax cuts for billionaires rather than run a government in a functional manner. And so Maggie will have more about that with her guests just after 5 o'clock here on the Civic Media Radio Network. To learn more about any of these shows and much more, head to civicmedia.us. Well, here's something absolutely nobody's been asking for. The headline from Hope Carnop in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel: Wisconsin Republicans introduce bill to allow concealed carry without a permit and propose stronger constitutional right to bear arms. Stronger right to bear arms? Allow me to steal from John Stewart, who says, if more guns make us safe, when does that start? We are already a nation awash in guns. We are a nation awash in blood. From all of the people who die from gun violence, from accidental gun discharges, from suicides, and more. And yet, there are now Republican lawmakers who've introduced several bills aimed at expanding access to firearms, including allowing for concealed carry without a license, without training. Why? Who is asking for this besides the mythical next mass shooter that you are encouraging were these bills to pass? And of course, they won't pass. Governor Tony Evers is still at the helm. He still knows how to operate a veto pen. So once again, these are lawmakers who are wasting your time. They're wasting taxpayer resources to make a political point, to go back to their districts and say, gosh, we tried to put more guns in the hands of more people without training and without licensing, knowing that we're increasing the odds of mass shootings and violent crime and gun accidents. But that mean old governor wouldn't let us do it. Could I kindly suggest you just put out a press release saying, hey, if you elect a Republican governor and a Republican legislature next year, here are the bills we would introduce to increase the odds that you or somebody you know would get shot. That press release will cost a lot less than the process of writing these bills, introducing these bills, having to take up time for committee hearings, even conceivably passing them, as ridiculous as they are, having the governor veto them, come back into session to attempt a veto override, which would fail. You've got people like Senator Andre Jacques and others who are saying, like in this quote from the story, for many Wisconsinites, firearm and archery traditions are more than recreation. They're a way of life passed down through generations. Yeah, they are. And they will continue to be. Because the people who do hunting and sports shooting and archery and everything like that know to go through the processes to get a license, to get trained, to take hunter safety. That is not the same as basically rolling a truck into the middle of town, dumping a bunch of guns on the streets and saying, have at it, gang. These are the people that love to point to a Milwaukee or a Chicago or other places and say, oh, look at all the violent crime there. They love to trash Milwaukee and other places. And then they propose bills like this that are going to put more guns into people who aren't trained, aren't licensed, aren't vetted. What a waste. Meanwhile, Republicans are recycling a candidate for attorney general. The district attorney in Fond du Lac County, Eric Toney, has officially launched a second campaign for attorney general. So there will likely be a rematch with Josh Call, the incumbent Democratic attorney general, who beat Eric Toney last time around. Now Josh Call has decided he wants to run for a third term as attorney general, and Eric Toney wants to take him on again. Well, what do you think Eric Toney talked about in announcing his campaign? We have also seen Milwaukee crime spiraling out of control. We see reckless driving where we know people are afraid to go to the city of Milwaukee. People avoid it altogether, and that should not be the case. Milwaukee is the largest city. It should be the engine that drives our state forward, that people feel safe to go and visit and enjoy the beautiful city of Milwaukee. Have you seen the attendance figures at American Family Field and for Bucks games and for Summerfest and the Milwaukee County Zoo and all kinds of other areas? Where people love to go to Milwaukee to dine and to recreate and to visit. They know the places that they want to go, but it's such a convenient, easy talking point to bash Milwaukee writ large as if you're going to do something about it as attorney general. Oh, by the way, he did bash one other group while he was there, immigrants. Because again, it's just a broken record with these folks, including the broken record of recycling a failed candidate. There's today's segment on not so great ideas. How about we go to today's history lesson? You want more Taylor Swift? I got more Taylor Swift for you. It's right after the Midwest Farm Report here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.